Arr, Grog.
Hey everyone, it's a Sideshow Podcast with me, Peter Fickling, Kerry Warbis and Matthew Weir. So this week, I was massively in love with Brian, and then I think at the tail end, it was potentially the worst 3 minutes of The Archers I've ever heard. So a bit of a mixed bag for me. What about you guys?
I don't think it was that bad, that balcony scene. But I really look forward to hearing why you hated that so much. And Brian, yes, he was great, wasn't he? Although I did feel for Rory this week. I was rooting for Rory.
Right, so Matthew, who are we going to deal with first then? The wonderful Brian or the awfulness that is Rory's life with Julianne?
I think we have to go straight in on Brian.
Okay, mm-hmm. Let's chuck an ad in and then we'll give Brian the love he deserves.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Matthew, let's see if we can get a word in edgewise before Kerry gives us the full beans on her love for Kerry. No, not flick the beans, Kerry, the full beans on why she adores Brian so much.
Well, I'm coming at Brian from a positive perspective, as I agree Kerry would as well. That sounds a bit weird, but you know what I mean. I've really felt for him this week. The moment that I really had my punch the air moment was when Rory was being an arse after they played Cluedo. And it was the use of the adjective grateful that really set Rory off, wasn't it? And he said, what, grateful for accepting your love child? And then Brian said, no, grateful that she took you in. I was like, that's the same thing, Brian. That's exactly what he just said. And then there was that moment where he was flouncing out of the house to go back to London. And I really liked this when people push back, because Brian said, go on then, tell me what it was I said that upset you so much. And I was like, yeah, go on, Brian. I was really up for him at that point. Because if someone is, you know, when people do that thing, you've upset me, but I'm not going to tell you what upset me. It's a bit like when they say, like, my dog's fine unless you annoy it. And they don't tell you what actually pisses their dog off. So Brian really pushed back on that, and he still walked out the door. But I think that was the moment where Brian realized that he couldn't do much more with Rory at that stage, and just to let him go.
My love for him peaked when he was like Kerry in the queue at the butcher's, just refused to move. There was no shifting him. He was sat on his bench, and Adam came over and was like, yeah, maybe we should. No, I'm not moving.
I thought Adam was so bad at that. You know, when Harrison said, just remember, take your time. And Adam pretty much marched over to Brian and started going, you do know you're trespassing, don't you? The police are going to be involved. He didn't try to work out with Brian what on earth was going through his mind or anything.
Is there any point me trying to sort of prod you and poke you to see if there's any bias here, Kerry? Or do we assume that everyone listening knows just how much you hate Adam?
Well, that's true. But I did think he was pretty poor at that. Did you notice that as well? That he didn't try to have any heart to heart with Brian. He was just like, you've got to move, you're trespassing.
So your dislike of Brian, your dislike of Adam is not, is multifaceted, right? So it's not as simple as the acting or, just the character itself. There's like, you know, you dislike him on pretty much every level. But I actually think this week, he's been a bit of the glue, you know, a glue that's been trying to hold the family together. He's trying to do the right thing. He's going around trying to get people to do. So he's trying to do some of the awkward kind of housekeeping that no one really wants to do, but needs doing at these difficult times. a bit like Linda did when she went over to Linda did when she went over to Lillian's house. And yeah, I thought it was a bit, you know, it was a bit awkward, and he was a bit school prefecty, the way he was trying to kind of move Brian on. But you know, it's a difficult thing to have to do when your bereaved stepfather's sitting on the new bench on the on the lawn of his old house, refusing to move and staring belligerently, you know, at the old kitchen.
I think you can at least say, "Are you okay, Brian?" You know.
Yeah.
Under any normal circumstances, Adam starting to talk to you is enough to get anyone moving, isn't it?
Yeah. I liked it when he said that Brian keeps just staring at the TV and he's not really watching. And I was like, yeah, that's when you're around, Adam. He's trying to pretend he's looking at the telly instead of having to interact with you. And then someone else this week said to Adam, remember, you're grieving too. And I thought he was going to go, oh, yeah, I forgot to change my voice in any way so that you would know that.
So I started this off by saying we were going to give massive love to Brian. So come on, Kerry, you know, let the floodgates open. Did you not find it the same as me? Like, you were absolutely just awed by how good Charles Collingwood is. Charismatic Brian is, even when he's, you know, stomping around, trying to avoid people, dealing with all these difficult emotions. Yeah.
However, when you were talking about the Cluedo game, a weird thing happened. I was on Rory's side completely. I actually felt for Rory this week, and I thought it was, you know, when you said he said, well, what did I say that upset you? I'm sorry, but I don't know what it was that I said that upset you. And Rory was like, there you go. You've got no idea about what you said that upset me. That says it all.
But Brian was just clambering to try and make things right with Rory, wasn't he, at that moment? I don't think he didn't need to be coming from a position that was defensive, did he? And Rory's just so, it's, okay, I get it, he's grieving for Jenny. But the last thing you need is some oik from London with manufactured outrage showing up. Flipping a board game over.
I don't think it's manufactured. And I tell you what, I think, like, anyone who's had Alice breathing down their neck every 5 seconds, going, what is it you're reading? It's that bit, isn't it? Which bit is it? She has driven me absolutely insane this week. Her and Julianne stifling people. So Rory's having to bat her away every 5 seconds, going, because he wanted to go back to London, didn't he? And he was like, no, stay here. And he wanted to see Ben. And she went, you keep seeing so much of Ben. You don't need to see him anymore. She was.
I would have loved to hear some Ben-Rory scenes this week, given what they've both been going through.
Exactly. She drove me nuts. So I was with Rory on that front. Then Brian was, you know, doing that whole Cluedo thing. Aren't we lucky to have had Jenny? And basically what Rory was trying to say was, we all took her totally for granted. I think that's fair enough.
You think that's what Rory was saying? That we just... Yeah. No, I understand that. I understand that, but that's not the time to start that argument, is it? I really don't think it is. All he was saying was how good Jenny was towards him. And she, you know, that was then... the impetus for him to go and trespass on the Gill's house and stare in through their kitchen window.
Yeah, I think he does need to have a good think about what he's done over time. And this is sad that the only way he's really properly doing it is when his wife's died, really. You know how much I love Brian, but I think Rory has several points.
Yeah, I mean, Adam's kind of feeling quite loved at the moment retrospectively by going through... the journal of Jenny. Wait till Brian carks it and they read his journal posthumously. He was like, oh, I remember when you welcomed us into your home. You were so lovely. He's probably gonna read a whole other show.
Yeah, it would just be a black book with loads of sort of ratings in it, won't it?
Any other things we didn't get? I mean, we were waiting for the Gills. We didn't get them.
Oh, how close, though. How close we were.
Natasha said they seemed quite litigious, didn't she?
Is she?
At the beginning. Yeah, in Thursday's episode.
Yeah.
She was chatting with Tom and she said, I'm surprised the girls didn't take action. They seem the sort.
Yeah.
I was like, do they? We don't bloody know. We've never fucking heard from them.
It does seem very weird that they wouldn't recognise Brian and then have the civility to go over and say, hey, yeah, I know this is your old house, but do you mind asking? You know, like, it's a bit weird they called the police.
It's not, it's Harrison, it's not the police, is it?
Yeah, yeah. They, you know, the strange guy in the village who cosplays as the police.
Teddy bear with a hat on.
Because he was like, oh, no, I can't do anything. This is a civil matter. He probably says that to every crime that he stood in front of, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's 300 kilos of cocaine, Harrison. Is that not a civil matter? All right, yeah.
No.
Unless Brian started kicking the shit out of the girls' new al fresco kitchen that had replaced their brick barbecue, there was nothing he could do.
I thought that sounded quite nice.
Yeah.
Of all of the kind of slightly sort of showy, nouveau things you can do with your home, the kind of like the opening up all-weather barbecue kitchen thing, I think that looks quite appealing to me.
Imagine if he'd gone back there and they totally ripped out of the kitchen and turned it into a garage where they were just dumping like old sofas and stuff.
But they did chuck the kitchen out, didn't they?
To an extent, I think.
Oh, right. I thought Jenny sort of caught sight of some of it in the garden.
In a skip.
Yeah.
A rusty tagine being used as a tulip bowl in the garden. I didn't know what you mean about Rory having a point. And then also, as I occasionally do, trying to sit on the fence a bit. But also, it's a parent's job to suck up the anxiety of their kids sometimes, isn't it? Like, he's obviously, it's a very, very difficult time for him. He's lost two mothers, which is, what's the Oscar Wilde quote? To lose one is something, to lose two is whatever. But
To lose one podcaster is unfortunate. To lose two podcast presenters is just carelessness.
But yeah, the poor. So I think, Brian's biggest failing was not actually just seizing the nettle and saying, okay, Rory, you're being a bit of a prick, but you have every right to. And let's have a chat about it. You've lost two mothers.
Exactly.
That's fucking awful.
Exactly. And Alice should be thinking the same as well.
The thing is, though, it's I'm not his father, I'm not his brother or relative, so I don't, and I, you know, also I am finding him more and more awkward a character to hang out with, which is all we do, and so yeah, I might understand why he's behaving like an absolute idiot, but it doesn't make it any easier listen for me.
Where are we going with him? Because
off the balcony. This is,
that's what I thought.
Yeah, I was kind of, yeah, I thought that too. But I mean, my problem with the character now is. He said last week, didn't he, I don't belong in Ambridge anymore. And I kind of feel that as a listener as well. What does he do if he comes back to Ambridge? He can't do anything. He's this kid that went off to uni has now become some kind of, corporate gigolo in this very strange relationship with this woman.
A horrible woman, yeah.
Well, who needs help closing deals? Who can take him along? Could Vince, if Vince and Elizabeth split up, maybe Vince could hire him.
Well, Justin knows what he's up to.
True. And, Justin alluded to the fact that that's the ridiculous thing. Like, what should have happened is Justin should have said, this is bananas. Look, I'll tell you what, come and do an internship for me and I'll actually give you some money for the work you do. Instead, he was like, oh, yes, we all do it, don't we? When we're young, we all prostitute ourselves to try and get contacts. It just kind of propagated this idea that it's in any way normal or part of the way that business is done. I mean, I don't claim to be the most knowledgeable man in the world, but I've been around a bit and I've never seen anything like that.
No. God knows what they've researched to cook up this nonsense.
If anyone's going to know about prostituting themselves for advancement, it's going to be Matthew, let's face it. So Matthew, come on, are we being naive?
Hang on, I just muted myself there. What?
you're the rakishly
closest to a gigolo that we've got,
with kind of almost endless levels of sexual charisma. So I would have thought you'd have, has no one ever offered you to try to Julianne you in over the years? That was a long pause there, Matthew.
Have you been paid for sex?
Yes, another pause. Yeah. Okay, anyway, we've never had three ads before. Am I going to chuck another one in?
I'll tell you what, I'm a bit jealous of Rory because I've never done that thing of like just tipping a board game up in the air. I would quite like to do that.
I have. I frisbeed. My stepfather, I told him not to, and he took Australasia off me in a game of Risk.
Oh, Risk.
I told him not to. That's not how it works, Pete.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, you know, I can imagine the UN and NATO meeting. Well, you know, he told me not to invade.
I thought I gave him every opportunity to back away from his foolish endeavour. And he decided it was strategically advantageous to take Australia. And so I discussed the Risk board across a French garden.
And that's a lot of little pieces, isn't it? Going pitter-patter, pitter-patter everywhere.
Was this last week, Peter?
Exactly, yeah. He sends his love. Yeah,
all over the alfresco. Cooking
all over the alfresco kitchen. Yes, this is probably why I'm not allowed in gardens or allowed to play board games anymore.
I think the modern equivalent of that is throwing the game controller down and then smashing it, isn't it?
My cousin shooed a PlayStation so thoroughly that he broke the disc inside it.
Many years ago, I was walking to the pub in Bristol and a copy from like a third or fourth floor window of one of these apartments in Redland. This like copy of FIFA came frisbeeing out of the window and landed in front of me in the street. And I had a PlayStation that was picked up. I was like, right, I'll have that. But I didn't really process it until I got to work. I was like, guys, this just flew out and landed at me in the street. And the guy I was working with was like, yeah, I've done that before. Just lost it in the game. Press this eject. It's out.
At the risk of being sexist, this is very male territory, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Yeah, my friend Martin, he was asked by his insanely provocative boss to do a last minute run at like Friday on a six o'clock, and ended up doing a John Cleese and shooing his car, kicking the lights in, kicking all the panels in on his car, because he just was so angry that his boss had basically just like thrown his Friday evening down the toilet.
Good heavens.
I think that's what psychologists call kick the car syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's being heterosexual does seem an unsupportable decision for women, I've got to say. You know, you've got an option of boldness with nightmares.
Speaking of nightmare males, which one are we going to talk about next?
Tony, can we just talk a little bit about Tony? About the fact that everyone seems to think he's doing quite well.
Sorry, who says that? Who says he's doing quite well?
Natasha said to Tom, Tony seems quite upbeat. And he was quite up chipper, wasn't he, when he was doing the Edible Forest and stuff like that. And I was thinking that Tony's life is so depressing that the loss of a loved one is probably like a dopamine hit for him. It's probably like, okay, yeah, I'm actually on the up now. Someone's died. I don't just have to concentrate on, you know, living with Pat. Because Pat said to him, I think it was tonight, you don't have to torture yourself. And I thought she was then going to go, that's my job, Tony.
Oh, God. Yeah, when she was like going, Lillian, Tony wants to speak to you. And Tony's like pushed forwards, isn't he?
It was very awkward though, wasn't it? Because and then she said, yeah, Tony would like to speak to you. And there was a big pause and Lillian went, Woody? I thought, no, Woody's Adam. You're confused, Lillian. And then there was that also that moment where Pat just went, it's still quite chilly, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The atmosphere between Lillian and Tony. Do come in for a cup of tea. It's all model babies and model trains in that family, isn't it?
Yeah, in my notes, I just wrote baby vom because I got so sick of listening to it this week.
Well, do you want some intel, Matthew, on the? Do you want an insight into the cutthroat world of baby modelling?
Go for it.
So I was saying to Kerry beforehand, I didn't know whether I wanted to talk about this on air because it's a sort of like I didn't want to be associated with Natasha in any way in this current iteration. So when Cyrus was very little, he got like so many compliments about like what he looked like and stuff. And we were just a bit, you know, we were just a bit bored. So we just looked up what was involved in, like, you know, getting your baby registered for an agency and all this sort of stuff. And I think also my wife was kind of like a bit bored being stuck at home. So it was as much about the opportunity to get out of the house as it was to kind of like, you know, any of the stuff that Natasha and Tom were going on. And you're like, oh, we'll have to make sure we've got the rights and put all the money to once. Like, you're not f***ing Lady Gaga. It's two babies for a you know, like a Rusk commercial or something. Anyway, so here's some hard facts, right? They don't want professional shoots. Because the babies have to be, they have to constantly update the photos because the babies are aging so fast. So what they actually do is they ask you to shoot the baby in plain white clothes on a plain white or close to background.
And they just Photoshop everything else in.
No, but these are the ones that, so they have it on file so they can show it to casting agents. But they don't want you to have these convoluted shoots because it muddies the water for the casting agents. Mm. And also they need you to update these every 3 months, I think it is, or 2 months or something, because the babies grow so fast. So from a purely practical point of view, it's complete bollocks. So anyway, I don't know if that's too tedious.
No, it's not. So you didn't pay £800, Peter.
You didn't max out a credit card doing it.
That's the only way this plot works, I think, is if Tony and Pat are right and actually someone has seen Tom and Natasha coming and is basically, you know, making a quick buck.
Seen
Tony servicing Pat's edible forest. I was saying to Kerry as well, Matthew, I did used to work in marketing to do with the music business, and there was always loads of teenage girls who were being exploited by, you know, paying a fortune for photo shoots.
Mm.
That's what it reminded me of, was these, you know, the...
Yeah.
The thing that got my goat about it, sorry, there were goats in the Archers this week as well, they were eating Lee's clothes, weren't they? But yes. I just thought, you have, whenever you hear from Tom and Natasha, she's under the cosh at Summer Orchard and Tom's losing his shit about veg boxes and accidentally delivering like 3 million kilos of carrots by mistake. And then suddenly it's like, oh, well, we could take the day off work. We could stay overnight in Birmingham. It was like, okay, all right. I guess you've just forgot everything that you've been saying in the last year. None of it made any sense to me.
And her saying like £800, well, you know, if you stick it on the credit, on the plastic, it's like an investment. It's like, what are you talking about? Why didn't Tom go, no, we're not doing that? And flip-flop between who wanted to do it and who didn't as well, didn't they? One was keen and then the other wasn't keen. But no, on Monday, they're going to do it.
Yeah. And it's very convoluted, isn't it? That Pat takes this photo of their kids that she's babysitting, and she doesn't even wait for them to see the photo. She has to come over and say, have you seen the photo that I just sent you in, which is obviously WhatsApp? I think they should put that one up on the website with Tony's socks in the background, and then a foot fetish website gets in touch and says they want Tony as a foot model for loads of weirdos to jizz over.
And also, like, when... you mentioned the goats as well. Did you notice that a goat laughed at something that Lee said to Pat?
No, I didn't. I did not. I'll listen out for that. Because you were very good at noticing how much one of Linda's llamas sounded like Neil once.
Well, this time when Lee asks Pat if they can babysit on Valentine's, he sort of goes, unless you and Tony have anything planned, and the goat goes,
very good.
Because of course they don't have anything.
I think I cackled myself at the same time, so that was probably the problem. Because Pat had a laugh. Are you sure it just wasn't Pat laughing, Kerry?
Oh, it could have been actually, yeah.
Because Pat did laugh in his face when Lee said that from memory. Lee's calmed down a bit, hasn't he?
Was it one of you two that said you were looking forward to this whole visit from the girls?
Me, because it's a test. That half term is a test. And Lee is hoping that Mabel and Betty, or whatever they're called, are going to love it so much that they want to stay with them. So I was thinking, how are Helen and Pat going to sabotage the week so that the girls don't want to stay with Helen?
I mean, it's a pretty bad mantra to live your life by. Lee said, if Helen's not happy, it won't happen. I was like, well, you're fucked, mate. She's never happy about anything.
Oh, I'm just waiting for one of the girls to sort of leave their jumper under the bed again and for Helen to just wallop them off.
it's Mabel and Evie, by the way. Lee's planning to impress them by taking them to, what, the cheese slide, World of Yogurt? Where else is there he's going to
The edible garden.
The edible forest. Here's the river that Brian poisoned. You don't want to go to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Do you want more pedantry from me?
Go for it.
The whole San Francisco thing's bollocks as well. All of the they haven't done their research. San Francisco's hollowing out. All of the tech firms are sacking people by the tens of thousands. San Francisco's been emptying for ages.
Do you not think she's some horrific right winger and she's the only person prepared to work for Elon Musk? Please let us keep our Twitter account.
Then it wouldn't be San Francisco. It's me being super pedantic, but it just irritates me that they couldn't just get on Google and just do like 5 minutes research. Just, you know, pick anywhere in the world that's actually a boomtown, that's actually, you know, that is relevant and whatever. Or at least just say Palo Alto or something to make it sound a bit
more. Do you mean like Swindon?
We need a jingle for Swindon at this point.
I have been to Swindon for half an hour. I've been to Swindon. Right? Just get that on the record.
You've got a lot of love in the on the Instagram stories this week. Monday morning.
It's fine. It's fine. By the way,
did you see that tweet, Peter?
It happens at home as well now. Charlotte calls me Charlotte calls me Biz. Born in Swindon.
Well done, Charlotte.
Yeah.
It was begging for that punchline then, really, wasn't it?
Well, you know, you're unpleasant people, but stuck with you.
Well, you need to do what Obama did and produce your long form birth certificate so we can all look at it, Peter.
Yeah, that's I'm Obama, you two are Trump. Thank you. That is exactly right, Matthew. thank you for
I'm
that.
I'm feeling analogy. Better now.
That makes me feel a lot better. I've got a lot of admiration for that man. Mm. And, you know, Michelle Obama does give him a bit of a hard time as well. But you're looking forward to this week. I don't know why, but it makes me feel very, very sad, the whole thing with Lee. You know, I feel like his little heart's going to get broken. And he's done nothing wrong so far. You know, there's no reason to dislike Lee as of yet. So I just really don't want him to get hurt.
Why has he chilled and why has he calmed right down? And why is he not sort of fighting for the girls? And he's just going, well, if Helen's not happy, then that's that. Because he said to Pat, didn't he, when she was pumping him for information, they're probably going to go to America. I thought, well, last time I heard you were raging about that notion.
Maybe it's tactical. Maybe he's hiding his insane plan. Yeah, he's got like a basement somewhere full of like automatic rifles and bullet belts like Rambo.
I thought you were going to go for a Joseph Fritzl solution there. He's already dug like a full basement under the house.
maybe just under the edible garden where Tony and Adam have been digging.
I will say at this point, we've discussed a lot of Pat and we haven't discussed Pat Chat this week.
Well, there's the jingle.
Pat chat.
It's become so ubiquitous. Hang on. Help me out, Kerry.
Ubiquitous.
It's become so that people are starting to hear it places where it's not happening.
Oh, yeah. Funny that, isn't it? I mean, I've heard loads of other things happening there. From here that weren't that.
I read this theory that there's this thing called it's some kind of like sometimes it's like, you know, when you imagine something is happening that's not. I remember watching Touching the Void and it was those two guys that climbed the mountain and then they fell and one cut the rope on the other. And the guy that ended up crawling around said he just, in his mind, he imagined that the other guys were right behind him the whole time and they just didn't want to embarrass him. And he started hearing Brown Girl in the Ring playing over and over again in his head and he doesn't know why. And it's some kind of oral comfort blanket. And I think when people are listening to something that's so distressing and so depressing, sometimes you will hear something that brings you back home and makes you feel safe and warm.
Oh, that's a good theory.
It's such a good movie, that. It's really, really, it's what you feel physically sick, don't you, with fear and trepidation for that poor guy.
I think I watched that about a year after it came out, so it's due a rewatch.
Well, I've never seen it. I would like to see that.
It's not an easy watch, Kerry. You need to be, you know.
That's okay.
You need a tub of ice cream, I think, to help get through it. It's pretty, really tough. Do you know what? I don't know why my brain jumped there, but I was really sort of over the moon to hear the Chelsea and Freddie interaction this week.
Yes. Although she was so rude, Peter.
But or does it speak of, I'm so determined they're going to get together, so I'm hearing what I want to hear. So I'm not ignoring you, but I'm ignoring myself in a way. I'm kind of just hearing I think it speaks to a kind of easy familiarity and trust between them, and she wasn't doing it in front of other people, and Freddie, and it was kind of inferred that Freddie views her as a kind of reliable confidant, and he no longer is talking to her like she's this kind of idiot subordinate.
I liked that side of it, and I agree, I would like them to get together, and I think these are hints that they could do, aren't they? All of these sort of little asides and him saying how much he values her and her bigging him up and saying, you can do anything, go on, you know, grasp it, don't let anything get in your way. I just thought, why does she have to do that? Like, oh God, what are you doing, mum? Could she not say, why, you know, just say it in a normal voice, that'd be better.
Playing devil's advocate, wouldn't we be saying, oh, what have they done with Chelsea? She's suddenly gone from being, you know, sort of, I don't know, a kind of, you know, Little Britain character to kind of like Prunella Scales in 1 week. You know, she needs to stay a teenager.
At some point that has to happen though, doesn't it? Like, they are going to have to flick a switch on her character. And we all want really good things for her. And whether it's the fact that she becomes Lady of the Manor or not, I think we're going to have a shift.
Yeah.
Sorry, a shift means a shag in Ireland. So I hope people haven't misread that.
A shift at the Orangery.
Yeah.
They are managing her. I mean, as we said to Madeline when she was on the show, she's arguably the biggest character in the show at the moment, in the Archers at the moment. And they are paying a lot of care. They have paid a lot of care and attention into how they've sort of boosted her character. So I think, unlike with what they're doing with Justin, there's something going on there. And Rory, which is just weird. They've handled Chelsea's kind of growing up very well. You know, like some of these, and also let's be fair, the acting has been sensational too.
And the hairdressing is a really good way to get her into other people's homes and to be dealing with loads of the characters, isn't it?
Chelsea cut Linda's hair before she was due to go to wherever she went to collect her MBE. And Lillian thought that Linda thought it was a disaster. And went, oh my God, don't worry, I'm going to take you to Fabrice and we're going to fix it. And then this time it was Linda who had to convince Lillian to get her hair cut by Chelsea. And you had this whole therapy by haircut thing that she just does to people. I mean, I did think there was that moment where she told the story about the hairdressing student who brushed the mannequin's head so hard it fell off and rolled across the floor. And, you know, I thought Lillian was going to, Jenny's head fell off. I was like,
yeah, do you think Fabrice is going to go out of business at this rate?
He's buggered.
He probably is quite regularly. But
I was about to say, it's a stereotype. It's a cruel stereotype. Matthew, you're above that. Come on.
but maybe, where is his salon? Is it in Felpersham?
I believe
Fabrice of Felpersham. Yeah, do you think our Chelsea can get the salon? Or Will she be a resident hairdresser at Grey Gables or something silly?
I don't know. There is a kind of a cider shed Chelsea Horobin crossover in my dad's local village, because there is a hairdressing salon called Rumours, which is also the name of a Fleetwood Mac album. I always run past it.
Yeah, I bet you do.
I want her to be a self-made woman, so I needed to have a big salon in town. So in Borsetshire, or, you know, in Felpsham, you know, whatever's going to make her most credibly successful and wealthy in her own right, so that she's not just, you know, Freddie's.
Yeah.
Freddie's little plaything, assuming this all happens. I think she's going to do great guns.
In terms of having sympathy for characters, Lillian, can we just have a quick chat about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are not in any way sympathetic to how she's behaving, and they're saying that they're saying she's very selfish. I'm giving lots of people a license on all of their behaviours at the moment, because Jenny's just died and people behave differently, and I don't think anyone's going to be normal. So it's getting on my nerves a bit that people are going, God, she's selfish, or, oh, Rory's awful, or, you know, apart from Alice, she was annoying. But but no, most of them, they're not right at the moment, are they? And I think Lillian has an understandable anger about being left out of the loop. I think she's going to get it in the end. It'll all be okay. But she's still processing everything.
Do you think they're going to do the flip where Lillian's actually dealing with it all immediately, and it's some of the people like Tony and Adam who have kind of like superficially been quite sort of steady eddies are going to actually have a bit of a wobble down the line?
Yeah.
That might be more realistic.
Yeah, good point. I think you're right that it's the feelings have to happen some time, don't they?
But this is a testament to family warmth, isn't it? Because when Joe Grundy died, it was very emotional, but the family, he knew he was loved. They loved him.
Yeah.
They moved on. Clary and Emma walked down the country lane that night, and they thought they saw two stars dancing in the sky, and then they just moved on, didn't they?
He was 3,622 years old, though, Matthew. It was a slightly different thing.
His last scene was Poppy had drew lipstick all over his face, which was wonderful. But I just think they're such a dysfunctional bunch that this is bound to happen. And, you know, if Adam goes through some grief later, I'm all for it. I'll hear those scenes. Kerry can post the log picture as much as she likes.
Justin has been handling Lily. He's been really putting some effort in with Lillian, which feels weird.
Yeah, I think Justin's been quite, I think, you know, I was saying about with Adam for you earlier on, like, is this your historical dislike of Adam that's showing, or is it his specific behaviour this week? Mm-hmm. Like, he's actually done the right things. He's done them in a very Adam way, but he's done all the right things.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, if you hadn't heard The Archers before and you tuned in this week, you'd be like, you know, oh, this Justin guy's quite nice. I can't wait to hear more from him.
I mean, apart from ruining Lee's plans to entertain his girls by forcing him to buy a year's supply of AA batteries, he's been a pretty stand-up guy, isn't he?
Yeah, and anyone who goes back in for more to entertain a small child is either, you know, recently released from prison or an absolute saint.
have we got a Mungo jingle?
We do have a Mungo jingle. Yes, exactly. The prediction of Mungo and his guitar was quite accurate.
He's just running around that. Apparently, he's like, if he's not trying to run over the neighbor's cat, he's running around the house, like, hitting people with the guitar.
Well, Matthew commissioned a Mungo jingle, so here it is.
Brilliant.
Liz, get Mungo guitar.
Yeah. The very eagle-eared among you might notice that the smashing guitar was the John Belushi scene from Animal House.
Oh.
If you're going to have a smashing guitar sound, you've got to have the most famous one of all time.
Because Kerry said last week, wasn't there a famous Mungo in a movie? But it was Mongo from Blazing Saddles, I realised after we were chatting.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I think we talked about this before, my absolute favourite character was the of Mice and Men character. You know, please, George, please let me play with the bunny rabbit. I will pet him and hug him and love him and kiss him. you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I read that book in school. What's the name of the guy? That's going to bug me now. Don't have my phone anywhere near.
Peter must know, considering he sort of can impersonate.
Lemmy.
Lemmy Small.
Yeah, I was going to say, did Kerry get a little bit turned on then? Oh,
please, Kerry, I will kiss you and hug you and love you.
Yeah, it's funny that when he sings, he sounds totally different.
Yeah.
The only one I need is the Ace of Spades. Write that down. That's going to be a great song.
That was more Dustin Hoffman as Rain Man. Still good though.
Oh, can I just ask another question as well? You know when they were reading out the journal? No, not the journal. Linda was writing the piece for the Village website. I bet that gets all of 5 views anyway. But she said, Jenny Elizabeth Archer was born on the 7th of January, 1945. Well, did she have a birthday in January? On the 7th of January?
Weren't they out for dinner on the same night that Vince and Elizabeth and David were having that terrible evening? And Ruth, obviously.
Was that they for her birthday?
Yeah, they were in the same restaurant, weren't they?
Well,
no wonder you were able to let Rain Man impersonation so well. Hell, your memory for the shine.
Yes, they were absolutely in the restaurant that evening because it was Jennifer's birthday.
Thank you, darling.
7th of January, 1945.
Oh, boy.
78 years old.
Can you remember what you were wearing when you were listening to the episode?
Yeah. Same thing I'm always wearing. Nothing.
Okay, not so.
I say.
So come on then, let's round off with the same way the week did. Let's have 3 tortuous minutes on the balcony with Julianne. There was a few levels of it to me. One was the fact it was madly implausible. 2 is just how dislikable Julianne was. And then the 3rd thing was having to hear Rory do that kind of weird attempted sexiness, then begging, was just awful.
There were 4 levels, I think, actually. So it's on the 4th floor.
Oh, it's a cheap joke.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah, it was very odd, wasn't it? How, I mean, all of it's odd, isn't it, with those two? All of it. But him begging as well. No, what am I going to do? But do you think, I mean, is he going to be homeless? Because she did say that's my apartment, didn't she? While he's been telling everyone it's his.
Well, apparently he spaffed all the money that Brian sent him.
Mm.
Is pride going to get in the way of him actually going back to his family and saying, look, I do need some help?
Well, the gay festival.
But he might, that's basically the problem, isn't it? He has nowhere to turn except for his family, and they're the last people he wants to go to.
But it's very interesting because it's only now dawned on him that the relationship he had with Julianne was utterly disposable at any point. Did he honestly think he was in control of any of it? Did he honestly think it would last a very, very long time? Did he not think she'd probably get bored of him at some point and move to another? Was he her first one? Has she had loads before him?
Well, he definitely got the heebie-jeebies when she said, don't worry, I can find someone else to go to the Barbican with me.
Yeah.
And that was last week, wasn't it? Almost like she's got one for the teenagers, a Rolodex of young men to call up. And, she is one for the teenagers, Julianne, anyway. What are we thinking?
Harry, when you release one of your little smashes, do they have a severance period, or is it, are you like Julianne? Is it just like, you know, that's it, they're gone, out the flat?
I like to give them like written notice, a month. Yeah, and then we have awkward sex for that month, and then off they go.
It sounds like you're very fair, firm but fair, as I would have predicted.
How drunk would someone have to be to mess up a business deal for you, Kerry?
Well, Kerry can answer that herself. She's done it loads of times.
Yeah, I have. I'm always the most drunk, so I don't notice.
Okay, there we go.
When we first did the podcast, you would regularly have had like a massive boozy night the night before. You're living quite a quiet life these days, aren't you?
I'm having a big one tomorrow. I'm going to London for the day. I'm meeting a right big bunch of Twitter people, only two of whom I've met before, one of whom took me to a Kraftwerk gig. That was one of the best gigs of my life. And the other one is a podcast person.
He took me to a Kraftwerk gig. Sounds like a euphemism.
No, he took me to a Kraftwerk gig.
Okay.
And yeah. So you're going to be soaking in a bath like a tea bag on Sunday morning, just letting
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
Have a fantastic time doing that. And let's check an update.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, Kerry, talking of Twitter, who are the sorts of people you're meeting up with, and where would people go if they want to join in the chat and potentially be on the invite list next year?
Well, do you know, most of them are not Archers people, although two of them very much are. Two of them are people who are on another Archers podcast who I'm meeting tomorrow. Yeah, but the rest of them are totally sort of from a different corner of Twitter.
Right,
they go to another school.
Okay.
But if you want to come and play with us on Twitter, it's at the Cider Shed Pod, and use the hashtag The Archers and have a right old laugh there. And we broke 3,000 last week and we're at nearly 3,100.
Yeah, it's all popping off on Instagram as well. I've been having a lot of fun on there this week. Had a little bit of a montage of Manic Monday and a train going to Swindon at the beginning of the week. Yesterday, I posted a series of audios of the things I am forced to listen to at work, which are Archers actors doing audios for English classes. And I asked people to guess who they were. So we had Elizabeth, Brian, I thought Paul. Paul kindly got in touch, who was also Joshua Riley in real life, and just went, that's not me.
Really?
But he was lovely about it. And then he said he's actually recording for that and for Cambridge and stuff. So he said, you might hear me in the future. There was someone else as well. I can't remember who it was. Oh, David. David was complaining about his noisy neighbours. Anyway, we are ever growing on there, and we are at the Cider Shed Pod, the same as Twitter, on Instagram. And we have a Facebook group, which got a load of new members this week, which was called the Cider Shed Podcast. So you can find us there too.
Amazing. We've got two new 5-star reviews as well put on this week. One by the Zulu Warrior, and they've titled it Irreverent. and they've put punchy, funny, and very scathing of the characters. I love listening to this one. There's a good vibe between the three presenters, and they come across well. Now my favourite Archers podcast. And then Red Agnes has also given us a 5-star review. Where have I been? Well, I was listening to a different Archers podcast, she says. Hello, Kerry and Peter, and other person with lovely voice.
You're welcome.
Fabulous. I love the bleeped out sweariness, although she put sweatiness.
Well, that R&T is very close on the keyboard, isn't it?
I would.
Once the summer kicks in, you never know. Might have to bleep out that, like a Sam Smith video that the right wing can get really upset over.
Yeah, and bless her, she's put delicious back catalogue to catch up on. So she's going to go back and listen to all of our almost 100 episodes.
Well, you will be able to hear Matthew shirtless back in the good old days when he was recording in his little Cool Hand Luke hotbox, oh, yeah, aka his pantry.
No. I was shirtless sat where I am right now. In the hot, okay. I wasn't shirtless when I was in the pantry.
Okay, but Matthew was he was hot in all senses back in the day. It was that era. The era is going to be over soon. Matthew's going to be in his Desiree's new penthouse without the sounds of farting motorbikes and La Cucaracha parties and gyms with techno.
Well, you never know who your new neighbours are going to be. So let's see.
Oh. No, exactly. New era, new sounds. And I think we have to say a big thank you to all our new patrons. We've had, I think, 6 new patrons this week. It is hard to exaggerate how much of a bounce it puts in our step because we love doing this podcast, but it's a big old lift. It's much appreciated, all of your generosity.
Yeah, I had my favourite named Patreon of the week, although we love you all, Cherry Lips. There was Adam Rayner, Ben Johnson, Dan Tooley, Andrew Marchetti and Richard Webb. And if I didn't, Caroline Godkin and Helen Davis, if I didn't mention you last week, I mention you now, but I think you got a double mention. So yeah, thanks to everyone. Massive help.
I'm going to have to beep this out because I think it'd be inappropriate not to, but my son's new, one of the people who works at my son's nursery is called
Absolutely amazing. That is an establishment from Lewisham, isn't it?
Yeah. It's maybe the best name any human being's ever had. But yeah, like I said, it would be inappropriate to say it on air. But yeah. Well, guys, do we have football to talk about?
Well, it was frozen for a while because of the whole game happening right now at Stamford Bridge. But I can tell you, not much.
Right,
hang on.
I'll go with that.
As far as I know, not much has changed. Just quick jump in. Let's have a look at the league. I've got 3 points so far. God knows what that's for. 4-4 poo. This outsider is still number one. Andrew Beasley in third. Julie Fremantle in fourth. Where's Kerry? Kerry's dropped in the table.
No, she doesn't care. Real life is keeping Kerry absolutely fine. I think you'd sacrifice the fantasy football league for real life.
I'm still in 17th, and Peter's now in 23rd.
I was in 5th last week. Just stop being dramatic.
Okay, well, you dropped from 4th to 5th, didn't you?
Months ago.
Okay, anyway, details how to join the league are in our podcast description if you already have an existing team, and we'll prep everyone next season on how to get involved.
And you're drawing 0-0 with Fulham at the moment then?
Yeah, despite spending £600 million.
Never mind, Matthew. Well, Kerry needs to start preparing for her big day tomorrow. Get all those hip flasks cleaned and ready to refill.
I might have to video call you at some point, Kerry.
Okay, yeah, you can try. I don't know what state I'll be in at whichever time, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'll keep you posted with how it's all going.
Well, take care, Kerry. Look after yourself. Mm. Be responsible.
I will.
Peter, if I were to say the word omnipresent, could you then edit it in and my failed attempts to say ubiquitous?
It's one of those
words I cannot say. I cannot say.
You're not a perfect man, are you?
Yeah, no. I can't. It's the same way that I can't say slalom for skiing.
And you say adjective.
Yeah, adjective, adjective.
Yeah.
It's because in Australia it's different.
Yeah, we're not in Australia now.
Well, how do you know? Anyone who's listening to this could be anywhere, Kerry.
Anyone who's got to episode 97 of this podcast without realising that you're flawed has bigger problems than how you pronounce omnipresent or whatever it was. Anyway, have a lovely weekend, guys. And everyone else, thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Laters, bye.
Hang on.